Hello, welcome to our podcast today called In the Loop. And today I'm here with Paul, and he's our new sales guy for New England. Paul, would you introduce yourself to our friends here?
Yeah, hi, I'm Paul Chamberlain. I've been in the heat treat business for about 35 years and happy to be working at Nets.
And where do you tell us a little bit about your family and that?
I have a wife, Amory, and two lovely children, Ryan, who's almost 30, and Alyssa, who's 26. Alyssa's actually in London right now.
Oh, wow.
She was at the baseball game on Sunday.
Oh. And so you have two adult children and all your hair. How does that work?
I don't have all my hair. I have more than you.
Yeah, true.
But, right. I have some hair.
Some hair. So, and then, so you have been in the heat treat industry for a while. So before we get into that specifically, and by the way, we are going to have a special call out to Barry Manilow at the end. I know that's why all of you have tuned into this episode. We will have Barry Manilow show up in a little while, but and we don't even have to talk about that right now. But talk about your career.
Sure. I was 24 years old. I was working in a supermarket, and I was doing part-time for the most part. A lot of hours, but only part-time. And I had a girlfriend. And she was pretty adamant that I should have a full-time job.
Oh.
So I saw an ad in the paper for Lindbergh Heat Treating in South Boston and answered the ad. And at the time, Lindbergh actually had a facility in my town where I lived in Norwood, Massachusetts. So I had the interview there and got the job. And the joke was that he actually interviewed in the Norwood facility and took the job because Norwood was a very filthy heat treat facility. And I took the job, even though I interviewed there. So started there. I started there in August of 1988. It was 8/8/88.
Wow.
The day I started. And just customer service at the time. About 9 months later, I was promoted to first shift foreman. So I really developed a good feel for the heat treating business after 9 months. And Lindbergh stayed in business in Boston till about 1993.
When did they close Norwood?
Norwood they closed in 91, I believe.
I do remember going there actually at some point because I was doing field service for the heat treat market. But not to interrupt you, go ahead.
No, that's fine. Yeah, Norwood was like about 1991. It's actually now a MBTA stop.
Oh.
They needed parking for the MBTA stop that they had there.
I do remember this, yes.
And now it's a big parking lot.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Southie closed in 93. What happened in Southie was a lot of our business was on the western part of the state, and Lindbergh had two facilities, one in Worcester and a couple in Connecticut. So instead of trucking everything out to South Boston,
right,
they just brought everything over to Worcester or out into Connecticut.
And I remember having to go to Lindbergh in Boston. It was kind of near the Gillette. Kind of you took a right instead of a left to Gillette. And
correct.
It was in that terrible, terrible parking.
No parking at all. We were right next to a junkyard, actually.
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah.
Rats as big as horses. You could put saddles on them from the junkyard.
Nice.
But, yeah, so I worked there till 93. I actually transferred to the Worcester facility. I worked there they wanted me to do production control there. Production I wasn't feeling, and Worcester was 60 miles away from my house.
Mm-hmm.
I really wanted to get in sales, but Worcester had just hired a sales guy. So the sales guy from South Boston went to industrial heat treating, and I got an interview there and started there in 1993.
Okay.
And worked there for 20-something years, and at the end doing outside sales.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a very, very good job for a long, long time, doing outside sales heat treating. Really enjoyed that part of it. Have enjoyed it my entire career.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, industrial heat treating went through a sale. It was owned by two sisters. One of the sisters wanted to sell. The other sister wanted to keep. So the one sister bought the other sister out. Mm-hmm. So they went Chapter 11 in 2014, end of 2014. I saw an ad for Gasberry.
Okay.
And interviewed there and took a hybrid job there. So it was half inside, half outside there.
Was it Gasberry at the time or still Hayes?
It was purchased by Gasberry already. It was 2002 Gasberry purchased Hayes.
Okay.
But they didn't really change the name over for every part that they bought until 2017, I believe.
Okay.
So, yeah, so I was working there with a bunch of people that you know. Peter Parker, Matt Marzullo, over there for... you know, the last 9 years before came in with you.
All right. And it's funny because, you know, Boston, Lindbergh, terrible parking, Norwood, terrible parking. But then I remember specifically the Worcester. You had to, you could pull up kind of off the curb, and it was almost like you were parking in between the sidewalk and the building.
It was
in front of the building. There's no parking there either.
No, I really have had no luck with parking.
Right, and then they've become body coat since.
They became body coat. In fact, the Worcester facility closed probably last year.
Right, I was there one of the last days visiting when it was empty.
Yeah.
So that's been your career, and now you're here. So what have what got you started? I mean, when you've been in the heat treat, and what compelled you to go into sales?
I've always been good with people. Mm-hmm. And I really had no other appreciable skills, so as you found out, actually,
you sold yourself for me to hire you. So, and I'm a tough.
So yeah, apparently, I have that skill, and
or I'm a sucker.
Whatever works. So I found that I had some skills doing that.
Well, actually, you had me at Barry Manilow.
Okay, yeah. You know, well, so. By the way, so every second interview I've ever gotten. Is because of Barry Manilow.
Is it really? Okay.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. So over the years, again, how many years did you say?
35.
35. How have you seen heat treat change over those 35 years?
So it's certainly a lot safer now. Heat treating back in the day, I mean, even before I started, I mean, you're talking about cyanide heat treating, you know.
Yeah.
That's all changed out, obviously. You know, they found that cyanide, hey, that might be a problem. The furnaces are all different. All the insulation inside the furnaces used to be kind of horrible materials. I'm not going to mention out loud.
No, the A word?
Yes, the A word.
The A word, yeah.
Yeah. You know, so now you have all the insulation that's a lot better. And the safeties are a lot better. I mean, back in the day, you had virtually no safeties in some of these older furnaces. In fact, when I was working for Gasbury, there's still furnaces from the 40s that are still working out there that I would have to find parts for. And... you know, if those haven't been taken apart, and I mean, they're just very unsafe. But they grandfathered in because if they were built in the 40s, you have to deal with whatever was back then.
Right.
You know?
Right. I still see, you know, as we go to replace some of this old stuff, you wonder how in the world we survived back then. We talked to Dan Bender, who was doing SCRs for 52 years, and we talked about putting your hand in these SCRs with 480 volts, 300 amps, with a metal screwdriver, and yeah. So back then, we were not very safe. That whole world wasn't very thought through.
No, you're exactly right.
And so that's a big change. And how about you know, we get involved in the certifications, specifications, and all that. Did you see that? As far as the requirements for accuracy and recording and all that?
Yeah, I mean, so at industrial, not a whole lot because they were just a commercial heat treater. They didn't have any accreditations at all. Lindbergh, of course, did. In fact, we did a lot of work at GE Lynn. All of the flaps for the planes, we did brazing on all of those. Okay. And you had to be accredited and you had to be GE approved and all of that. So I found that a lot of the commercial heaters now have all those accreditations, because if they don't get them, what happens is companies like GE, some of the big companies, Pratt Whitney, they're bringing heat treating in-house because it's just easier for them to manage. They don't have to worry about deliveries, and they have their own people to do all this. So if you don't have those accreditations, even if you do, you have to keep the accreditations up, because these other companies start thinking, well, why don't we just bring it in-house? If they don't have the accreditations, why would we do it?
Right. And so what do you see? Do you see anything in the future, or do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I really think you're going to see a lot more automation in the future. Finding help is very difficult, as everybody out there can attest to. I think there's going to be automation at the front end and the rear end of all heat treating. And I really think continuous heat treating is the way of the future. Just starting a part at the very front of a furnace, have it go through your hardening process through the continuous furnace, get it out to if it has to be washed, if it's an oil quench, a washer. If it doesn't have to be washed, right into the temper afterwards, and then it comes out the other end all heat treated.
So that's interesting. So tell me what it looked like before. You know, that sounds like a cell, you know, like today.
And you could do it in a line. You know, you'd have a bunch of batch furnaces that would be in a line, say an integral quench furnace. You'd do the hardening in there. It would come out. It would move over into a washer, come out over and into a temper. But you still need a lot of people there to, there were bigger loads, and you had to have everything ready. And quite honestly, there was a lot more work back in the day too. So with less work and the less workers, if you start out just at the beginning, a quick little small load, and it goes through the entire process, a lot easier to carry, a lot easier to lift, and it gets done all in a continuous fashion.
Plus, I would think if it's in one process, you've got the data acquisition, you know, the recording of that one process. So every that part is now, because we used to sell software years ago that would track the part through the factory and generate a report, where now it's, if it's in one machine, you know, all that data is associated with that one part. They know what happened. Did they ever, like, take part of that process and do half of it in this building and then send it somewhere else to be something else done?
Very rarely. It did happen if you had a part that needed to be hardened and then, say, nitrided, and your facility didn't have a nitrider, you would send it out for the nitriding somewhere else. But very rarely. Most of the places that I worked at especially could do all the processes needed to do the heat treating.
Okay, cool. And what was the weirdest thing you've ever heat treated? Was there anything that you were like, oh, that's interesting?
We heat treated paper once. And it was not very successful.
Isn't that called a fire?
Yes, that's what I would have called it. It was after Norwood had closed, believe it or not, and we had to actually open up the facility. It was the only place that had an air-type furnace that you had to keep it under, I think it was 475 degrees, and this paper was very specifically needed this temperature to do whatever it did, and I'd never get into it. It was a one-time deal. But we did heat treat paper once. And before I got to industrial heat treating, they had a big floor furnace. It was probably 6 by 6 feet high. I guess they heat treated a cake. Someone needed to get a big giant cake baked, and they did it in their big giant furnace.
Oh, wow. How big was it?
It was a 6-foot cake.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they got it low enough so they didn't destroy.
Yeah, but I mean, the furnace went down low enough. It went down to 300 degrees, so the cake, I think it was 350. Wow. So, wow.
And was Hayes gas, electric, or both?
They were both at one time. At the end, when I got there, it was mostly electric furnaces out of the Hayes part of Gasbury.
Okay, because I know a lot of furnaces went from electric to gas years ago, and now they're all going back to electric.
Well, I mean, it's the wave of the future. The other right. wave of the future is going to be green technologies, right. and right. we're seeing a lot of that in the industry right now as well. People looking to go green as much as they can. As we know, electricity has to be made somehow.
Right.
But if it can be electric and we can keep it green, that's the right. way people are going to go.
Right. Between that and just take, you know, cleaning the air coming out of the stacks of the electric companies and reducing that, it's a lot, you know, that helps.
Of course.
What are you going to be doing for us?
So, I'm going to be an outside salesman, and I'm going to have the new...
I do know the answer to this, I hope.
Yes.
But I'll let you. Why don't you tell our friends here what you'll be doing?
Yeah,
for
I'm going to be visiting our people in the Northeast, seeing all of our customers, and probably seeing a few new faces, and trying to bring people to do what we do.
Right. Okay. And the thing that got you the second interview, and maybe didn't get you a third at some places, and something that I'd never admit, that I do have Barry Manilow songs on my playlist, but was your Barry Manilow story. I mean, you put it on your resume, so you obviously knew that it was a selling feature, otherwise you wouldn't have put it there, and you seem like you're really embarrassed about it, but you did put it on your resume, so.
I put it on the resume for a specific reason. I mean, right. it gets me in the door a lot of places. Okay.
Well, now it's going to get you on the map, because we're going to, you know, we're going to put at Barry Manilow or something on this podcast, and we're going to get Barry Manilow to watch this. So what exactly is your relationship with Barry Manilow?
So in 1980, I was in high school, I sang. And quite honestly, I started singing because it was an easy A. It was three times a week, and it was an easy A. And as a junior, you tried out for another singing group. It was called the Madrigals, and it was a specialized group. And I made the group as a junior and again as a senior. You had to do an audition for both years. You didn't just get to skate through afterwards. Mm-hmm. And as a senior, our group was picked to sing backup for Barry Manilow at the Boston Garden for two concerts.
Oh, cool.
So it was very nice. Got to meet Barry Manilow for about 17 seconds. Yes. He had some dental surgery or something while we were doing our stuff, but we got to meet him and sing two concerts at the Boston Garden. So it's two songs for two concerts at the Boston Garden.
And then what were the songs? One Voice.
One Voice, and I write the songs.
Well, cool. I was in chorus. I did it for fun, not a grade. I was a terrible student, and this was more at my speed. But one of the most fun I have ever had was doing his. It was called VSB. No, VSM. It was very special medley. It was all his commercials,
yep.
and we had a blast doing that. And that was probably why I liked Barry Manilow, because. That was kind of a goofy song and that. But so we have a picture, you know, hopefully in post-production, you'll see we've captured a video of this that is not the concert he was in because they didn't record the one at Boston Garden. But there he is. Do we have this Mr. Producer over there behind the camera? Here we go. And where are you? Point
I'm
to you.
Way over here.
You're way over, right over there.
Right at the corner.
There you go. Look a lot younger.
Way younger.
What year was that?
1980.
And I, you know, you Google anything and you can find it. I found a concert in 1980. I sent it to you. It was him doing, the reason it was probably findable, it was a Jerry Lewis telethon where he did this.
Yep.
He let them cut in live from a concert he was doing somewhere else. So we'll show you a clip of what actually was going on and put a picture of this and show you Paul on it. So and that's why you're hired. Now, we got to come up with a Barry Manilow medley song for probably the not the bumper, but the exit of this.
Yeah, there you go. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, One Voice, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Perfect.
Or I Can't Smile Without You or something like
that.
Right. So, well, thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Hopefully you'll be seeing Paul. You know how to connect with us, and please feel free to give us a call. We look forward to serving you in the future. Again, thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Please welcome Mr. Barry Manilow, ladies and gentlemen.
Takes that one voice. It takes that one.